Okay, thank you, Martin. So, the topic here is too strong. The topic here is to consider maps which has the property of being quasi-convex instead of convex maps, and in the conditional sense. Okay, so this is a joint paper with Marco Maggis, which is a student in Milano University and is also here. And so the outline is that first to talk a little bit about quasi-convex real-valued functions, then we come to the conditional case or to the dynamic case, which is the topic of this lecture. And a few motivation why I'm interested in this topic, and then we set the notation, the assumption, and we state the results, and a little bit about the proof of our results, and then we go back to the one of the possible motivation for the study of quasi-convex maps, which means the conditional certainty equivalent. And in order to set this in the right framework, we develop, we apply the theory of Musierak ORRI spaces, which is the stochastic case of ORRI spaces, and so we get also the dual representation of this object. So let's start first recalling some very well-known fact. What is a quasi-convex function? So here is a real-valued quasi-convex function. So it satisfies this condition. So you take the convex combination of two random variables, and you have this inequality. So the f over this convex combination is dominated by the maximum of f of x and f of y. Okay, equivalently, a function is quasi-convex if all the lower level sets are convex. Okay, of course, a very simple example of such function, which is quasi-convex but not convex, is okay. So an example of a function which is quasi-convex, then I can, but not convex, is of this form. Okay, and then do you see here now? Okay. Now I thought I could skip this up, but then very well. So findings about this function goes back to 60 years ago, and De Finetti was especially interested in this quasi-convex function because he was interested in this level sets, because the question he was interested in is, given a family of this convex set, there exists a function for which this family is the lower level set. And this is important in the utility theory, because you can say the preferences are given by a function, or are given by a family of indifference curves. Okay, so, and also Fenker and many others, and more recently Penaud and many others also, but he especially gave many review about the application of quasi-convex analysis in many different aspects of mathematics, of the science. And so I recall here Vorre, because the next result is a result by Vorre, which gives the dual representation, which is written here, of a function. So we assume now that E is a locally convex topological vector space, so E star is the topological dual space. And so under the assumption that the function f, which can be can assume both plus infinity or minus infinity, is lower semi-continuous and quasi-convex, Then you have this representation in terms of the element in the dual space. Okay, so X star is in the dual space, and you have this object R, which depends on two variables. So one is T is not time here, okay, it's just a constant, and the element in the dual space, and this is the definition of R. Okay, so this is a well-known result, and as you see, since we know that the lower level sets are convex and closed by our assumption, then it is a simple application of Hamban's theorem to deduce this. It's really five lines of proof, and you deduce this result. So, instead, more recently, and, 1 year ago, Cerea, Maccheroni, Marinacci, Montrucchio, they applied essentially this theory to the case of a quasi-convex cache subadditive risk measure, so it's also decreasing, and they call it rho, and this risk measure was defined on L infinity. Okay, so the notion of subadditivity was already introduced in the literature by a paper of Ercarui and Ravanelli, which was already mentioned this morning. And I will tell you in a moment why they don't use additivity, because quasi-convexity plus additivity already implies convexity, so you don't get anything new. So the thing is that in this paper they replace convexity with quasi-convexity and cache additivity with cache subadditivity. And so you see that this is exactly the same theorem as before. Here you have the interpretation of this term R, which is the reserve amount that is required under the fixed scenario Q to cover unexpected loss given by T. Okay, so T again here is not time, it's just a monetary amount. So what is the difference between the standard case of convex risk measure is that you cannot split anymore the contribution of this quantity and Q. In the case of a convex risk measure, here you would have the maximum over the expected loss minus a penalty term. Instead, here you have this function R, which takes both components. So now, if we go to the conditional setting, which is the topic here, is that we suppose that G is a sub-sigma algebra of F, so this is time T and this is time S, for example, S smaller than T, and so you have this map, pi, which is defined on a set of random variables with values in another set of G measurable random variables, and we will come back more precisely what these spaces are. So again, this map pi is quasi-convex, is the same definition, except that now the lambda here is G measurable random variable, so it's conditionally quasi-convex in this sense, so we have the same inequality. The convex combination is dominated, pi on this convex combination is dominated by the maximum between pi of x and pi of y, and the same for the lower level set are conditionally convex in the standard way. So this is the definition, and the problem of this, okay, so this is the definition of quasi-convexity, and the problem that we want to address is, what can we say about the dual representation of this object, conditional maps, which are only quasi-convex instead of convex. And there is no surprise, actually, in the result, in the sense that as in the convex case, for a convex pi, the dual representation has the same structure of a quasi-convex real-valued maps, okay? So, which I just mentioned before, so it's easy to guess what would be the representation. It will be given in terms of conditional expectation instead of expectation. Here we have the expectation, here we will have condition expectation here, but the proof, as I will try to explain, at least our proof, is not a straightforward application of known techniques. So this is the topic, the argument, and now let's try to check about some of the motivation. One is already, I already mentioned, because in the case you want to consider dynamic quasi-convex risk measure, then you have to, we want to replace convexity with quasi-convexity. Of course, convexity means this inequality holds for all lambda, and which this is the same inequality, simply this holds, of course, because lambda is between 0 and 1. So quasi-convexity alone means that we have this quantity is less dominated by the maximum. So we don't need, we cancel this part, and we maintain only the control of the risk of a diversified position. Okay, so we say that quasi-convexity alone allows to control the risk in this sense, and so we accept as a possible axiom or property for a convex or for a measure of risk. Second motivation for this study. Now, the second motivation is based on this object, which is a stochastic dynamic utility, U. So we are considering dynamic aspects here. So, of course, this utility will depend on time, and is also may depend also on omega. Okay, so this object satisfies these three conditions, and well, apart from the fact that the effective domain, which is defined here, does not depend on the other two variables on time of omega, but the essential point is that as a function of wealth of x is strictly increasing and concave, strictly not quasi-concave, concave, and as a function of omega satisfy the measurability condition that you expect, so it's FT measurable. Okay, an additional assumption is that it's also decreasing with time, but we will not use that unless it's necessary. Of course, this has been used very recently, this sort of stochastic flow by Nusier and Zaripoper to build a theory of forward utility theory, which considers the compatibility with the market of such utility, stochastic dynamic utility. Here instead we use this motivation, I mean, we use only to define a mechanism, a valuation mechanism, which assign to a given x, which is a time t random variable, some value which is given a value which is going to be a random variable at time s and will be denoted by c, c for the certainty equivalent, okay, which I will mention in a moment. Just recall that we first define the set of random variables. T means that these are T measurable random variable and satisfies this integrability condition. Okay, so it will be a map from this set to another set, but as you see immediately, these are not spaces, so are just set of random variable. In order to make sense of this definition of a conditional certainty equivalent, what is this object? So it's, as written here, it's the very natural simple generalization of the notion of certainty equivalent as given by Pratt, for example. So we have our utility, which now depends on these three variable. Here is not written omega, but we have also omega. So we have this x, which is our claim, or FT measurable random variable. You compute the utility, you take the condition, expectation, and you want that to find that certain amount, certain in terms of s, of time s, so this random variable s measurable, for which realize this equality. And so since we took u to be strictly increasing the first variable, you can write this as the inverse of the utility. So you have this operator is between these two set of random variables is defined in such a way. We have that conditional expectation there. Wait, where is it? Yes, well, it will be, you see, omega is everywhere here, so not only, okay? Another way of saying this is the following, is that the conditional certainty equivalent process, instead of random variable, so it's the only process y, okay, such that it coincides with x at the terminal time, and such that this is a martingale. So u evaluated over this process s is a martingale. It's the same definition. And in any case, this notion defines a mechanism which is typically not concave, but it is quasi-concave. This is why we consider this as an example, in the sense that we have a quasi-concave dynamic functional, which arises very naturally from the definition of this stochastic dynamic utility, but which doesn't have this concavity property, but is also only quasi-concave. Okay, so this was for the motivation. Now we come to the setting, okay, the precise setting. And so we record that pi is this map, and we want to define what are these two spaces and what are the assumptions on pi in order to state our representation result. Okay, so here is few notation. So well, this is simply the LP spaces, so we put this F here to simplify notation. And LF and LG are going to be our basic spaces, so our subset of L0F or L0G, but having two properties. Well, LF must be a locally convex lattice, otherwise we will not be able to apply Hambanach there. And LG is just a lattice of G measurable random variables. So on LG we have very few assumptions. Now, this is G, of course, okay? This is containing G, sorry for that, this is LG. And instead, this is the order continuous dual of our basic space LF. Okay, so for example, if LF would be L infinity, this is going to be L1. And of course, this also is a lattice, this is just the notation. Now we come to the assumption here. Okay, the assumption of this space is that, in addition to what I just said, but is that both spaces must satisfy this property. This, of course, is needed because we will need to build a regularity property for the conditional representation. So we need that if X is an element in this space and A is any measurable element, measurable set, then also this belongs to the same space, okay? And then the other two conditions is that the order continuous dual is a Banach lattice, which is embedded in L1. The same for LF, okay? So these are useful for our representation. There are some weaker also conditions, but for ease of the presentation, this is enough, and you can see that all these spaces satisfy the assumption. So you can start with LP spaces as our basis space for any P, 1 or infinity. Of course, the order continuous dual is going to be LQ, so we have our assumption, or the Orbis spaces, or also the Morse subspace. At least if psi is a continuous Young function. So all these spaces, LP or Morse subspace, satisfies our assumption. Now we come to the condition on pi. The condition on the map pi are the following. Of course, these are all P almost surely inequality here, and the monotonicity, we know what this means in the right sense, okay, not as for risk measure, which would be decreasing, here is increasing. Then lower semi-continuity for a given topology tau is that the lower level set is closed for each measurable G measurable random variable Y. And finally, the regularity condition, which also is nothing really special, because the same regularity considering the case of convex dynamic risk measure, which says that for any A G measurable, this is satisfied. Okay, so these are the three conditions, plus, of course, quasi-convexity, which I already mentioned. Now, why are we interested in this lower semi-continuity? Well, of course, because we have this closure property, but the topology tau that we are going to assume is the following. So it's going to be our standing assumption in a moment, you will see, is going to be that pi is lower semi-continuous with respect to this weak topology. So in the case L infinity would be L infinity L1. Okay. Now, what here is stated is that this is a very natural condition because it's nothing else than continuity from below, very natural in this context. So you probably know very well this proposition in the context of risk convex risk measure. The same holds even if we say have only a map which is monotone and quasi-convex, then again these three conditions are equivalent. So weakly lower semi-continuity with respect to the weak topology, pi is continuous from below, which of course is written here, and pi has the Fatou property, which in general is nothing else than order lower semi-continuity. Okay, this proposition holds under our assumption of the space. Actually, it holds even more generally from two Ritz spaces, which one of, at least if this is order complete. So it's a very general proposition which has nothing to do with the particular setting. Okay, so the point here is very simple. I will state the result with respect to this assumption, but you can replace this assumption with continuities from below. Okay, you expect you need some continuity in order to have that the dual representation in the order continuous dual, so in the nice space. So this is the theorem. Now we have all the assumptions, and so we can state the theorem. So if pi satisfies all the assumptions that we just mentioned, so monotonicity, regularity, lower semi-continuity, plus quasi-convexity, we have the representation we are looking at, pi of x is simply the supremum of this object. Now the sup is taking with respect to all probabilities, because this p is this set where you know what this means, so the density is in p in this sense. So all probability q which belongs to the dual order continuous dual and are element in L1, okay, so are probability in this sense, and this is the supremum, and this object is exactly the same object that you had in the real valued case, except that here you have a conditional expectation. So you have exactly what you would expect to achieve in the conditional sense. Now, before giving a feeling of the proof, let me state some easy corollary that follows from this theorem. The first one is that Q can be considered to be equal to P, so you are we are replacing in this corollary, we are replacing the set P before we had the set P with the set PG. Okay, so this set PG is the set of those probabilities which are absolutely continuous with respect to P, such that are also equal to P on the sigma algebra G, exactly as in the convex conditional case, in the convex conditional case, yes. And so you are taking the supremum over this smaller set. In order to have this, you need this other assumption, which is automatically satisfied if you also assume, when you also assume cache additivity, but we are not assuming it, so we have to write this. But this is a very simple corollary. And the other result I want to mention is to understand the role of monotonicity in this theorem. So actually, the role of monotonicity is only used, so this axiom is only used to show that in the dual representation you have positive elements, except for what we just said about the equivalent condition of for continuity from below. There also we use monotonicity, and in the next two results, but for what we said before, it's only used to show that you have a nice representation in probability. Otherwise, everything would hold, but you would have the representation in terms of sign measure instead of positive elements. And so, of course, this easy lemma shows that monotonicity allows to replace the inequality sign that we had before with a quality sign, so this is very simple. And now we come to the notion of cache additivity. So if we add, what is cache additivity? In this conditional sense, we think all know, so lambda is G measurable. And so we have this property, the plus sign, because I'm using this setting. And it is a fact that if you add to quasi-convexity this axiom, so cache additivity, you immediately get convexity. This is also why in the paper by Maccheroni and Marinacci, they only used sub-additivity and quasi-convexity. And however, if we add the cache additivity to our setting, we know we go back to the convex case, but we also recover the conditional representation of a convex map, which was already, of course, known. And this is the result. Before the result, we need to define, as usual, the convex conjugate, which is written here. We have the conjugate function. So we have P star, which is the conjugate of P, which is the penalty in the representation of convex conditional risk measures. Here again, we have the set PG. And so we have this corollary. Okay, the corollary says that if we add to all our assumption, because we are assuming that pi satisfies all the four axioms, you add the cache additivity, then this k is nothing else than what you would have in the convex case. So it splits, it separates the contribution of x and the contribution of q. You have the conditional expectation of x minus the penalty, which is only a function of q and not of x. Okay, so given this, of course, you put that in our theorem, you have the convex dual representation of a conditional map. So now a few slides about the proof of this result of the theorem. Okay, so first of all, it's easy to recognize that you cannot directly apply Hambana to our map pi, even though it is convex and has this closure property of the lower level set, because if you look at the proof, for example, by Vorre or whatever proof, you see that what you really look is this sort of set, and X will not belong to this set without the complement. So, and then you pass to the complement and you apply the theory, some consequences of Hambana, but if pi is not anymore real valued, you don't get a convex set there. So you have, for example, in R2, you would have, this is a convex set, and the complement is not a convex set anymore, so you cannot directly apply Hambana to this function pi. Now, what for the case of convexity, how do you prove the dual representation of a conditional or a dynamic convex map? So suppose pi is convex, then you take the expectation of this convex map, you call it pi zero. Pi zero is a real value, is convex pi zero. Then you apply the representation of a convex real valued map, and obtaining, and then you get the, you work a little and you find the dual representation of pi. However, if you do this when pi is only quasi-convex, you lose this property. Okay, pi zero is not anymore quasi-convex, so you cannot use. So the idea is simply to use a different map which preserves quasi-convexity and is real-valued. That's exactly the simple idea in the proof here, is that we work, instead of p0, we fix, for a moment, fix a g-measurable set A, consider the essential sup of pi of x with respect to or omega is in A, so essential sup over A of pi of x, call it pi of A. Then this is a good map for us, is real valued and is quasi convex. Then you consider a finite partition of G may of G and call it gamma, okay, and A gamma will be element of this partition gamma, and then you build this pi gamma, which is simply all the single pi A of this form with the indicator function. So it's approximation argument, and then what you would like, our theorem would be to show this equality without gamma, here and here. If we are able to show this, we prove the theorem. So we first define this object in such a way, replacing here pi gamma, and it's easy to show that this object and this are equal. So this is the first step of the proof. We show that those two are equal. Then you take the infimum with respect to all the finite partition, and so you see that this equality is also easy to check. So we have that pi of x is equal to this, because these two are equal because of this equality over here. So the point here is that we need still to show that all this is equal to, is the infimum of this can be, sorry, the infimum of this can be written in such a form, because this is our theorem. Our theorem says that pi of x is equal to this expression. So we have already this, because this is given by the definition here, so we need to prove this equality. So the whole point is to show that this is indeed an equality, and so as you see, you have an infimum. First of all these super and inf are essential sup and essential inf, these two, so this is random variables. You have you can show also quite easily that the set are downward directed in one sense and upward directed. So this inf is a limit of a sequence, this sup is a limit, increasing limit of another sequence, but then you have an inf of a sup or an inf that does not exchange. So you need some uniform approximation, and this is where some work is required. Okay, so I think now we come back to the part regarding the conditional certainty equivalent. Okay, so which was one main motivation for this research. Here is exactly the same definition as before, so I don't repeat it, but just to recall. And one could also think of the difference between the expected value and this quantity, which is of course the risk, the conditional risk premium. And but now we are looking to the representation of this object, but there could be some interesting facts about this risk premium, conditional risk premium. But now we come back to the representation of this object. So we need to check that all the properties are satisfied, and here are the four properties. Now we have quasi-concavity and continuity from above, because naturally the utility is concave, and so it's not convex, but we replace all what we said with quasi-concavity and continuity from above. So here we have our four properties, so pi satisfies the four properties, which allows us to apply our theorem. Moreover, it has automatically, actually by definition, the semigroup property or consistency property. And if you also want to add the additional assumption that u is decreasing with time, you have also this inequality, which shows, for example, that in this case the risk premium, which was just defined, is always positive. But let's see one standard example. You take this utility, the exponential utility with stochastic factor, so this is going to be the definition of the conditional certainty equivalent expressed in such a way. And under simplifying condition, strong simplifying condition, so actually no more dynamics here, we have this zero and this is alpha, we get what are known as conditional or static entropic risk measure. So except that you have to change the sign, so rho u of x is nothing else than the risk measure which is induced by the exponential utility. Why I state this example? Because you see immediately that if you allow time dependence, you lose the monetary property. The monetary property means here cash additivity. You don't have any more cash additivity. What you have is just cash, again, super additivity instead of sub, because we are changing here the from quasi convexity to quasi concavity. So this is the idea of super sub or super additivity property, cache super additivity property, again with this random variable with respect to fs. And here is the proposition, is that if you assume that this process is increasing, then it has this cache super additivity property, but not in general, it does not have the cache additivity property. So this is a truly map, the condition assertion equivalent, which have all the property I was mentioned by pi and has not the cache additivity or concavity property. Okay, so the last thing that we need is that we need that this certainty equivalent should be defined on vector space, actually on lattice, because that was our assumption. So we still need to define the appropriate spaces over which define this conditional certainty equivalent, which are in our setting the following. So you extend the Ory spaces to what is called in the literature Musierak Ory spaces, which is exactly the same definition, except that now you have the dependence on omega, and this u hat is nothing else that the Young function u hat, which is defined here, which is associated to the utility function u, as we introduced and studied already in other papers. And of course, since you have a dependence on omega, you need some more integrability condition, and the integrability condition is written here. Now we even extend this Musierak Ory space to consider time dependence, but the same definition, this integrability condition allows to define properly the space in a moment. So we take the expectation of u hat satisfies this condition, and so these are the Musierak Ory space in the dynamic setting. Again, it depends on time and on omega. Okay, why we introduce this? Well, these are Banach lattices actually, so we are happy with them, so we can apply our theorem. Before applying the theorem, we go back to the example of the exponential utility. So in the case of the exponential utility, that integrability assumption is satisfied under this condition, and we see that this map, this operator, brings the more space into the more space of time t here and time s. So it's consistent, brings the random variable from the right subspace of the Ory space into the same subspace of the Ory space, of course, depending on the right time index here. Okay, so given this, it means that this definition is well posed if we consider this set. And finally, this is the dual representation of this object. So now we start with a whole Ory space defined by u hat, which is the Young function associated to the utility, and we have this representation. Okay, now we have the inf instead of sup, again because we are using quasi-concavity instead of quasi-convexity, but it's exactly the same representation, because this now is simply a corollary of our previous results. So here you have the infimum of this quantity, and this g replace r. Okay, I had to change the name just because here is quasi-concavity. So, but it's exactly the same, except that we are now dealing with the specific case of the conditional certainty equivalent. And if instead of having an x which belongs to the large space, we have an x which is in the more subspace, this indeed is a minimum. And this does not hold only for exponential utility, but for order utility satisfying our assumption. So now I come to conclusion. The first, I would like to thank you. And the second one is welcome to the reception. Okay.